Hey, this is John Welch from SkyMouse Studios, and if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you really should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend Jason Cutter. And I will definitely be looking for my check in the next 5 minutes for saying this.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader.
Before we get started, I want to share what we do at Cutter Consulting Group. So I started CCG, frankly, because I saw a need at countless organizations where the sales teams were not performing well with high cost per acquisition, high turnover, and a lack of scalable processes. Today, we serve companies in many industries from B2B to direct to consumer. We're driven to transform our clients' reps into quota breakers while building a sales process that produces amazing results and can scale to any size. To get more information, go to cutterconsultinggroup.com. On the show today, I am super excited for my friend, John Welch. So John is co-founder and president of SkyMouse Studios, content creation agency in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Chattanooga, Tennessee. John's experience includes inside sales, outside sales before starting his own business. So he's that blend of creative and marketing and sales. And then I just found out before hit recording, he knows a lot about lighting and video, which is awesome. And in addition to the love of sales and marketing, as he puts in the intro for me, he's a husband, a father, music producer, and a chef, which I didn't know, which is awesome. John, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Jason.
So many things, and I'm going to do my best, like I told you before we hit record, to stay focused and have this conversation be about the topics we want to cover. But so many cool things. Let's start with kind of you and why did you start this business? Why did you start the business that you did with SkyMouse?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I got out of school, I went to school for audio and video production. I've been recording since I was in high school. I love writing my own songs, making my own music, that kind of thing. So I met my current business partner at school. We both went to Franciscan University. It's a pretty small Catholic college. We're both Catholic. So we met there. We started the company right afterwards. We just liked the idea of marketing. It just appealed to us. We're both kind of creative guys. We like doing goofy stuff and being different. And we saw that as being something that made sense in the marketing world. Our long-term goal for our company is actually to become an actual media company. So marketing is kind of our first foray into that. And the reason why we do content creation is because long-term, we want to be like legit content creators. And by that, I mean like film, TV, that kind of thing. There's a pretty significant network of Catholic money in the world. And so our aim is to kind of grow a company that proves that we can create the content and then use that to attract the right investors to sort of create a Catholic media company that would be able to get some of the things we want to get out into the world in a way we'd never be able to just on our own. So that's kind of the long-term vision of the company. But the first step is prove to the world that we can market and that we can create great content. So that's kind of what we're in the stage of right now.
And I'm glad that you clarified, because at first I was thinking, what's the difference between marketing and the content creation and a media company? But it makes sense. So short term, you're doing it and proving that you can do it for others. And then it's to go into that media mode.
Yeah, and do it for ourselves, right? I mean, we have a YouTube channel called Overt TV. And that is pure for Catholics. It's for Catholic high schoolers and college kids. And it's kind of like a proving ground for us, right? So, I mean, marketing is always changing. And honestly, there's a lot of stuff right now that isn't working. And there's some stuff that is. And the stuff that is working is really hard and it's really time consuming. And there's a lot of people who are out there trying to make the market, businesses in general, believe that in 6 months they can build some like machine. And the reality is that it's more like 18 months. It's more like 24 months, right? And so we're trying to prove what works so that we can be honest with clients and be honest with small businesses and be like, hey, here's where you should spend your money and here's what your expectations should be. And if you can't spend the money, then stop buying. It's kind of like what you said on my podcast, stop buying from people because you're not going to get what you want. And if you can't spend the money, then you need to commit to something for a long time, not 6 months, right? But before we can do that, we really need to be able to prove out how it works, right? So, I mean, Most of what we do, though, is just content creation, which helps support people's campaigns. Most people don't realize that the reason most marketing campaigns fall apart is they run out of content, right? They're like, oh, yeah, I've got like this great white paper. Okay, that's one post, dude. Maybe you can stretch that 3 weeks. Exactly. But I mean, if you're trying to create a machine that runs for 12 months, you need content every week, every month, over and over and over again, right? And most people have no idea how to even start on that process.
In your experience, because you mentioned things that work and don't work, what's not working? Is it that lack of content or is it the production value?
It depends on who you're talking about, right? Like most of our clients are small businesses. I'm not sure what your like target client is, like in terms of size or revenue, right? But like most of the companies we work with are under 50 people, right? And so that's where I've really been trying to crack this code, so to speak. And what I'm landing on is that I think if you're a small business, you can't afford content, which is kind of a funny thing to say, right? But the reality is that most small businesses need new business, right? They need new business more than anything else. But they don't either know how or have the time to do any of the activities to generate net new business. But they're constantly looking for someone to pay like the $700 a month extra they have in the hope that that will get them net new business in 6 months. And we just have this cycle of they're not spending enough money for a long enough period of time to see any results. They don't have the money to spend because they're not seeing results, and they don't have time to do it themselves. I think it's just because they don't have good time management. So I know I'm painting kind of a dreary picture, but the reality is that what's not working is what people are doing right now. What doesn't work is spending a bunch of money on Google Ads when you have no funnel in place or no reason for doing it, or you don't even know who your target audience is, right? What doesn't work is trying six different kinds of marketing because you did one for 3 months and you didn't get any results out of it. And this is basically what's going on, right? What's not working is treating marketing like sales. And that's why I talk about it a ton. I've been trying to talk about it more because I'm more convinced than ever that that's the biggest problem. But basically, we have an entire marketplace that is trying to judge marketers by sales metrics. And the marketers are letting them, and it's hurting both sides, right? If you need a sales guy, you need a sales guy. But don't hire a marketing guy because he's going to get you a bunch of closed business in 6 months. That's not a marketing function. Even if you had a performance marketer who could generate the interest in 6 months, he's not closing that business anyway. You're still going to, right? Like, there's so much misunderstanding about the real handoff between sales and marketing and what to expect from each side that I just see that as being the fundamental problem right now.
So in your experience and what you know to be true, what should marketing be judged against if it's not judged in terms of, let's say, sales KPIs?
I mean, I think that it has to be connected to revenue somehow, right? But the problem is that when you're talking about a small business, what does that even look like, right? I mean, most of the small businesses I work with, a lot of times they don't even know what their revenue is, right?
It's scary.
So I would say that they need to stop trying to judge it by anything. They need to find someone they can trust and figure out what they have the capacity to do, right? I think that there's so much focus on results, and I know that it sounds funny to say this, but I've been thinking about this a ton because I'm trying to really figure out how to serve small businesses here. When there's so much focus on results, but you don't actually understand the actions themselves, there's nothing to judge. Like, all you're doing is saying, I expect something to happen. I'll throw money at it. I'll throw some kind of activity at it. But if you don't have any concept of what success even looks like or what the activities look like, what are you judging? And like, that's where I see we're at right now. I mean, there's some bigger companies, 50 to 100 people, and then obviously much bigger ones. They have marketing systems in place. And a small business looks at it and like, I want that. And they don't have any concept that that person is spending 15 to 20% of their ARR, right? They're spending huge amounts of their recurring revenue on the marketing machine that this guy is drooling over, right? He doesn't even have the monthly income that they're spending on their marketing. And yet they want to bring someone on who's going to create something similar for them and pay them $500 a month, or they're going to spend an hour on it per week and get the same results, right? So I know I'm kind of repeating myself here, but the problem is that until small businesses understand what they're trying to accomplish and where marketing fits into that, there's no point in even doing it. Because you're just wasting time and money.
Yeah, that's so true. And I see that a lot as well, where somebody, individual or company, wants that result, right? And they're focused on the result, whatever that result might be. And they either aren't willing to or don't know the inputs, the actions that can go into it. And there's also the fallacy and mistake, which is let's focus on results, but you can't control results, right?
Right.
You can't control how many likes or views or engagements or anything, let's say on the marketing side. All you can do is control your activities and your actions. Like you can, you can only control how many phone calls you make. You can't control how many people buy, but you can figure out over time that conversion rate so that if you put in X, you're going to get out Y. And, you know, to use an analogy like working out and being healthy, a lot of people want to be in shape, but they don't realize like what it takes to get there. And maybe they're not willing to put in the effort. Or using your example, right? Somebody wants six pack abs and they think, okay, if I go to the gym once a week, like that'll be enough. And it's like, no, it takes a lot more than that. And then also not realizing the effort. If you want that marketing machine, it's going to take a lot. And you don't have to have it right away. I think it's important to improve and incrementally increase over time.
100%.
Just be realistic to where it's at. And it's so fascinating because I see that a lot as well, especially the number side. A lot of businesses who don't know their numbers, they're just kind of doing it and working a lot on faith or hope and that they're getting some results, but they don't even know where it's coming from.
Right, exactly. I guess that's what I'm saying is, because I don't want it to sound like I'm being like dreary or something. The reality is that if you're willing to put in the work, you can actually attract new business. But the problem is that you have to adopt a marketing mindset, which a marketing mindset is not a mindset of I'm going to put in this activity today and tomorrow I'm going to see X result, right? It can be in certain areas, but that's performance marketing. And data-driven marketing is specific to a certain thing, right? It can accomplish something, but that's a whole different world, right? If you're going to do performance marketing, you got to have upfront money to spend on that, right? You got to spend it on the ads. You got to spend it on the thing that is performing, whatever it is, direct order mail or telemark, whatever you're doing. And so what's fascinating is that like we live in an amazing time to run a business, because if you're willing to work, if you're willing to put in some hard work that honestly isn't nearly as hard as I would say as like making cold calls.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but it's not the kind of like eat your brain out that like those sales activities
brutal
are.
Brutal punch, I mean, in the face.
Yeah.
Mode, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've done them. I mean, most people my age aren't emotionally capable of making sales calls, right? And it's just a simple, and I'm not even like, I'm including myself in that. Like I've done it, right? I've probably made a couple thousand cold calls. And like every time it was like the worst experience of my life, right? Like I hate it with a burning passion. Anyway, so, but the reality is that it's just about time management and picking activities that are going to work and then just being consistent. That's all it is. You can generate interest in your company if you have the right activities done consistently and enough of them, right? So it's volume of the right activities done consistently. And if you do that, you can generate interest in your company. You can attract people to your business, but it doesn't happen in 6 months. It happens in 12 to 18 months. And it doesn't just magically happen when you pay somebody to do it either, because you got to really know what you're doing. And if you're not willing to invest, I don't know, $2,000 to $4,000 a month for that 18 months, you might as well not invest at all, because the activities are going to be so minimal for what you're paying for that it's going to take so long that you're better off just figuring out how to fit it into your own schedule, right? Like that's how I see it. Like I'm genuinely trying to help small businesses.
And I love it. And that's why I was super excited to have this conversation, because I know both from what we haven't even touched on, and I don't even know if we'll get to, which is the abundance side and giving away lots of content for free and providing value first instead of handout first, right? Like just coming from that place. But then also the drive that you have, which is similar to myself, which is wanting companies to succeed. And it's not always about telling them what they want to hear or selling them more crap and services that they aren't going to use. It's about sometimes these tough conversations and like the reality of if you want to achieve a result and a certain level and you want to improve and increase, then it takes some effort and it takes doing something different than you've done before. What advice would you give to companies specifically? You're talking about as a 9, 12, 18 months content strategy to build that marketing machine, right? Which I think is important.
Right.
But they got to eat for today, right?
Yeah.
So where do you see that? And what do you tell your clients? Like, this is cool. By the way, year and a half from now, you'll have a machine built. But for now, you should do what?
I mean, what we're seeing work for ourselves. So my business partner does the majority of our like cold outreach. He's just better than I am. It's funny because my background is in sales and his is not, but he's like has more of that personality that I think would be like considered probably an SDR. He doesn't make cold calls, but he's just better at like starting the like completely cold conversation. I'm good at making friends, but I don't feel like I'm making friends when I call a person randomly. I feel like I'm annoying them.
That's just a mindset thing. I think there's a balance of doing both, but...
There is 100%, but like I'm way more about like, oh, we're friends. Now I'm happy to have a conversation with you about how I can help you. Let's do that, right? So I definitely fit more on like the second half of the sales process. Like naturally, I fit into that much better.
Got
and
it.
You're 100% correct, right? I mean, I'll be the first to admit I'm just a little bit of a pansy, but I just hate that part of the process. So he handles a lot of that. But worst thing is we've kind of adopted a new approach, which is I think that the biggest reason why so many people are failing at cold outreach. When I say cold outreach, what I mean is any conversation you're trying to start with someone you don't know right now. And I don't care what that is, whether it's literally mailing a letter to them, whether it's making a phone call, whether it's sending the messages on LinkedIn, whatever it is, I don't care. It's any kind of conversation you're trying to start with someone you don't know. I think that the problem is everyone is starting from the perspective that it has to be clear upfront from the beginning that I want this to be a business relationship. I think that is what's killing cold outreach, especially for small businesses. Now, if you're like an SDR or an AE, like a bigger company, and you're like on your metrics and you're pounding on a dial or whatever, I think it's totally different. But we're talking about the world of under $1 to $2 or $3 million companies, probably, right? 30 employees or less, in many cases, 10 employees or 5 employees. And it's one guy who's running. And he's like, how do I start new conversations? I think what you do is you find people that you connect with, literally. They look like someone you could be friends with, and you just start up a conversation with them, right? I know that sounds kind of silly and it also sounds kind of abstract, but that's what's working for us. Like my business partner, we decided, you know what? We're going to start having conversations with Catholic people because we're Catholic and we think it's cool to try to start having more relationships with other Catholic businesses. It's not like Catholic companies in regards to their like selling to Catholics. It's that we went to Franciscan University. We have a huge network of people that also went to Franciscan or at least are also Catholic, which automatically means we have a ton of things in common, right? We like big families. We go to mass on Sundays, right? I literally had a message from a guy. Let me read this just to help you understand what I'm talking about. He said, good morning, John. I hope you're doing well during these dark days. I'm a cradle Catholic, married 26 years, 14 kids, and I enjoy networking with like-minded people. I thought we should connect. No sales pitch, I promise. Have a great day. That to me is a great way to start a conversation with somebody. I literally was like, hey, dude, awesome. I'm one of 7. So I have half of an idea of what your household is like.
Nice.
Right? I was like, let's have a phone call and see if there's any reason or like, I just want to get to know you. Right? I now care about this guy because he and I have something in common. I don't care about him because I might be able to sell to him or he might be able to sell to me. Right? And maybe this sounds crazy. Maybe you're listening to this and you're like, that's a stupid idea, John. But I'm saying like, it's what's working for us. And I think that most small businesses need to get their head out of the concept that even prospecting now means I'm starting a conversation to sell something tomorrow. Like even if you're talking about eating tomorrow, you're not really talking about eating tomorrow. You're talking about eating in like a month or 2 months. Like you still have a sales cycle. You still have to like start the conversation, have a couple of conversations, figure out if there's a need, talk about the need, put a plan together. Like this doesn't happen tomorrow. So even if you're selling, it's still a process, right? It still takes a new sales rep, I don't know, 6 months, right? What's a normal ramp up? 6 months, 9 months before he's like cranking out deals. Why? Because it's still a process. Even if he started a conversation the day he sat down at his desk, that's not a closed deal, right? So I think that that's the mindset. You're just trying to make friends with people that think like you do, that you could potentially do business with. And the rest kind of comes out of that. But you got to get out of this mindset of like, I'm trying to grab business out of the ether. And if I just put in enough activity, then I'll find enough that I can grab. I just think that's a bad way to look at it.
Totally agree, especially, again, referencing the small business mode. You're selling small team or the business owner. I mean, it's about those relationships first, depending on what you're selling, depending on the value that you're providing. Now, with the clients that you've seen, with the companies you've seen, either that you're working with or not working with, at the level of the people on the team, the sales reps, what are some other successful traits that you're seeing with the top sales reps, the top sales teams at these organizations?
Well, that's kind of a funny question. I mean, I might not be the best person to ask that because most of our clients don't actually have sales team against small businesses, but some of them do. And I can probably speak to that more accurately just from the conversations I'm having with other salespeople like on LinkedIn and stuff, even like yourself. I mean, what it seems to me is working the best is, as cliche as it sounds, caring more about whether or not it's the right fit than anything else. I really think that's the core of everything. It's like, I mean, I think you call it empathy, right? I mean, it's empathy, but it's, I mean, a good example is one of my clients is a telecom company here in Indianapolis, and their top guy was telling me that they had a conversation recently with a prospect, and they sit down with the prospect and he says, here's what we're doing. He's like, and, you know, let me guess, you're just going to tell me that we need a hosted phone system, right? I don't know if you know anything about telecom, right? But basically hosted phones or, you know, internet phones, it's all the rage. And my client was like, why would I tell you that? He's like, I don't know. And he was like, I need to talk to you first. It might be, but I have no idea because I don't know what's going on with you. And like, just that response was enough to instantly, this guy was like, oh, totally different company. I feel so much more comfortable now. I don't walk into this meeting and he's just like, you know what? You really need a hosted phone system. He's like, tell me what's going on. We've got any kind of phone system. We've got ones on premise. We've got hosted phones, whatever kind of phone you can imagine we have. I don't care about the technology. I care about your business, right? And I know it sounds cliche, but that's it. It's always it. It's always the answer. Care about the other person more than you care about making a sale. If you can do that, you will sell more.
It's great. And it's not, I mean, it's cliche, I guess, but it shouldn't be because it should be the truth. I know for me, I love doing that, taking that approach, especially selling, where I go with some of my clients to trade shows to help them be more effective in the trade show booth and help them sell and learn how to sell better there, at least back when that was legal in trade shows. And that's one of the things, people walk up to the booth and they're like, tell me what you do, you know, asking me because I'm standing there. And I'm like, well, before I do that, actually tell me about you. I hate that walk up and then you get this 5-minute monologue and it turns out like that's a terrible fit and I can't use it. And you just wasted everybody's time.
Right.
So I just throw everyone off. I'm like, I can, but tell me about you. Like, what do you do? What are you looking for? Because right. I'll tell you if it's even worth talking or not. Like literally, it might right. not be. So,
I'm not mistaken, I think you probably are also the kind of person who genuinely cares about who they are and what they're trying to do, right? And I think that's really what it comes down to. It's all mindset. Everything's mindset. But if your thought process is, if I don't make a sale, my family starves, then unfortunately, you're going to make really terrible sales decisions. 100%. It's just the nature, right?
Yeah, that desperate feast or famine mode, that desperate, like, if I don't make this sale, we're living under a bridge tomorrow, that happens. And I've seen people literally in those situations, and it's not effective because it's like hunting when you're starving, you're just going to get desperate. And I could imagine chasing down the animal instead of being patient and waiting.
Right. Or you grab a snail off the ground and
and you're just going to make bad choices and or you're going to scare everything away. So no, I think that's super valid. Now, shifting a little bit for you, what does it mean to be authentic?
Oh, that's a good question. I think actually for me, being authentic means I don't let what I think you think of me change any of my actions. I think that's what authentic means. I think that the most inauthentic thing you can do is say or think even something because of what you even perceive to be someone else's thoughts. Like to me, being authentic simply means I express me, not what I think other people want me to be. That's what it means to me.
I have never heard it put that way before or thought of it that way. And I absolutely love that. I mean, it's about not worrying or thinking about what you think about me. It's about me just being me without it being adapted to the other person fully, right? That's amazing. And then the other part, obviously, is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Tell me about what you think about persuasion and where persuasion fits into your success in business and conversations.
I think persuasion is a synonym for truth. Like we talked about it on our show, you know, like a lot of people see it as a dirty thing. I think that it's the used car salesman disease kind of. I mean, the only person who sees persuasion as a dirty thing is a person who has been persuaded to do something they didn't want to do. That's not persuasion, right? That's coercion. Persuasion is truth. So if I'm persuaded to something, it's because it was held out to me in a way that I was able to recognize it as the thing that actually was what I needed, not my own thought, right? I'm only persuaded if I check it against my authentic beliefs, what I believe to be true. And for me, you know, that's a lot of different things. My worldview as a Catholic, my belief in God, my family and what they mean to me, and my duties as a man and a husband and a father, all those, right? So there's a whole bunch of things that make up John. And there's a whole bunch of things that make up my identity specifically. And those things hold way more weight with me than anything you think, right? Or should. So if you want to persuade me, your words need to be so true that they actually help me realize a better version of myself. And if they don't, I'm going to reject them, right? And so like, that's, I think, where persuasion is important, is that it's understanding it has to be between two healthy people. If I allow myself to be coerced, that's an unhealthy action. I'm not actually being true to myself. So not only is the person who's coercing me or kind of falsely persuading me, not only are they behaving badly, but so am I, right? So it's on me as well. But persuasion to me is one person authentically living their best way, like they're trying their hardest to do the right thing, and I am as well, and their presentation of truth actually helps me be a better person. That's authentic persuasion.
That's awesome. Where were you when I was writing the book? That was great.
I'll write the foreword to your second edition.
There we go. We'll get you in the next one. I think that's amazing. I completely agree. And I love how you put it, where it's really two truths and anything outside of that is coercion or manipulation, which, and I appreciate what you said too, which is both parties are responsible for that. The person who gets coerced or manipulated is also responsible. I mean, they agreed to it, whatever it was, unless they're forced against their will, it was a choice, right? And they're accountable to it. And I think that's important. And I think especially the persuasion piece fitting into the authentic reality and the truth and what is true for you and them, that's the home run. When you were growing up, what did you want to be?
I've wanted to, and I still want to. I've always wanted to be a musician. Let me go back a little bit. Well, I mean, I am a musician. I wanted to be a famous one. As a very little kid, I wanted to be a major league pitcher. And that's a funny story because it was only once I was about 25 that I realized why I never could have been. I was pretty good. I could throw more accurately than anybody that I ever played with. Like I could throw the ball pretty much wherever I wanted it, and I had a nasty curveball, but I never threw faster than like 75 miles an hour, even whenever I was in high school. I played with guys who threw 85, right? Because I was also a catcher, so I caught for them.
Yeah.
They threw way faster than me. I could still make it work in high school because I was accurate enough and threw enough junk that I could make it work. But I finally realized whenever I bought my first blazer, finally realized why I would never have been a major league pitcher. I have really short arms. And I never knew it growing up. Never knew that's why I could never get my top speed up at all. I'm normal size, about 5'11", but I wear a short jacket. My brother, who's like 5'8", has about 2-inch longer arms than I do.
Interesting.
It's noticeable. I have a short arm. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, that's going to make a major league pitching a little hard to get that.
Yep, I never would have got the speed up, but it was a blast. I loved it. But anyway, so I mean, when I was about 16, I got into songwriting. I fell in love with music, playing bass when I was like 13. And then I learned guitar and then piano and drums and stuff. And I just kind of got obsessed with it in high school. And I even entered some competitions and stuff. Like I would try to produce my own music in my bedroom. My dad had like a little recorder. And like at this point, I've got like a pretty legit setup in my bedroom that I play with. And I'm working on like stuff I'd like to release by the time I'm 45. Now, at some point, I would like to legitimately try to like grow some sort of audience on Spotify or something like that. But I got to get my production chops up. I'm pretty close to being able to release like a semi-professional sounding song on my own. And at that point, I could start to release some music periodically. But I just freaking love it. It's nothing gets me as excited or would make me enjoy my life more than like playing live for shows. I'd freaking love it.
And do you see yourself, this total side tangent, but do you see yourself playing like all of the instruments in kind of a collective thing like some artists are starting to do these days? Like I'm thinking of one FKJ, he'll do every single instrument and then loop them all together. Or is there one in particular you want to be?
I'm primarily an acoustic guitar player. I do all of the instruments on all of the songs that I produce myself, right? I use MIDI drums because recording a drum set is a nightmare and a half. But aside from virtual drums, I play all the other instruments, right? Like I would want to go live with a real band. Like Ed Sheeran's amazing, but like it adds something to the live experience, how he does everything with just his acoustic and the loop pedal. But it also kind of takes something away a little bit because there's just so much around a song like that the instrumentation brings to it. And like, that's kind of one of my favorite things is like arrangement specifically. I wouldn't want to miss out on that. Like the live music experience to me is amazing, but it's missing something when it's just one guy.
Makes sense. What's the most non-sales job that you've ever had?
My first job, I was a page is what they call them, but I shelved books at a children's library. So it's about as far as you can get from sales, I think.
I would say so. Yeah, that's pretty far. What was your first sales job?
My first sales job was right out of college. I was an office broker for a real estate company here in Indianapolis. I hated it. Hated it with a burning passion. It was really old school. Like I was supposed to just pick up the phone and like call businesses I found on Google. Like I was reading all these books about how to like have good phone calls and like there was no resources. Their training, like they had some program I was in that was really bad. Like just so focused on like selling like it was 1980. I mean, it's unbelievable, man. Like it's crazy to me. Like, when I got out of school and started into the business world, what was insane to me was how there were so many companies constantly complaining about how hard it was to sell or how their salespeople were failing. And yet, knowing what I know now, if any of these people had paid somebody like $20,000 who knew what they were talking about, especially before LinkedIn got so saturated, these companies could have exploded, and they had the cash, right? They could have exploded if they just paid somebody to show them how to use LinkedIn to prospect. Because I was trying to figure it out, but I didn't have any idea. I was like looking up YouTube videos, but that's all garbage, right? All the good stuff people keep to themselves when it comes to that kind of thing because they want to get paid for it. But there's people I know who grew their entire business on LinkedIn in the period of time since I got out of college and now. And all these businesses just threw all this money at salespeople, just hiring and firing over and over and over again because they weren't working. And the reason is they would hire them and then tell them to pick up the phone. And it's like, and do what? You're not giving them data. They've got no, like, the what?
Yeah, they're just hoping that that person will know what to do and that they found a diamond in the rough and a superstar, because essentially they're just abdicating any responsibility to the sales.
That's 100% to be successful. And I mean, the funny, I don't know how you run a business and don't realize that if you can pick up the sales guy off the street for 50 grand a year, he's not the sales guy you're looking for.
And I say that all the time. I mean, if you're available, you're a salesperson, you're available, something happened, right? There's something wrong. Now, there are times where maybe a company went out of business, was beyond their circumstances, especially when I see a seasoned vet with years and years of experience who's now moving to another company. It's like, okay, there's something, it's you, right? It's you. And if you don't plug them into a system, it's just going to repeat the cycle, right? It's like getting into the same kind of relationship and just picking the same wrong person every time, right?
Right. It's like the girl that always dates the mad guy.
Yeah, right. And you're just hoping the other person is going to be the solution because they're finally going to be the right one, but it's still you, right? There's one common factor.
Right. I mean, it didn't take me long at all to realize that there's an entire segment of the sales population that makes a living selling themselves, not products, right? Like, that's it. Like, they just hop from one company to another every 2 years, convincing the next company that the reason they left the first one was because it wasn't a good fit or the other company didn't give them what they needed. And somehow these people manage to continually level up as well. Like, they get paid more, right? They're like, well, I've been in sales for 5 years. And it's like, yeah, well, have you ever sold anything? Well, why does that matter? I've been in sales for 5 years. Then they become a sales manager, which is even worse. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, that's a tangent for a whole nother episode that we could do, but I agree. I mean, I warned businesses and I realized that very early on is to watch out for salespeople selling themselves in the interview, because what happens is they sit down in the seat and they don't perform and they're not very good. It's almost like they used it all up to get the job. And so you always got to be careful. Interview process. I mean, it's tough because you want someone who sells really good. You want them to sell you in the interview, but you also want to make sure they can perform. So again, that's another episode we could do together.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Last couple of questions. What's your definition of success?
It's changing constantly, but I think it's totally different now than it was probably a year ago. And it's especially more different like this month than it was like even 3 months ago. Like, I've just recently come to the realization that I don't think I care that much about where I'm at right now. I care a lot more about like the next 20 years or so. And I guess the biggest thing is I do not want to wake up when I'm 50 and realize that I didn't spend any time living where I was at, right? I've spent so much of my life thinking at some abstract point in time where I've accumulated something, I'm good, right? That's success. And I think that it's slowly, my definition is slowly becoming something more closely resembling success is when I wake up in the morning at peace, I go to sleep at peace, and all the time in between, I was at peace. That's success to me. And not just like that I have like a calm, measured existence, but like to me, a big part of that peace would mean that I'm not just doing my work well, which is just doing my daily work to the best that I can, taking care of my company, my own clients, whatever that is, but also that I'm giving my son the time that he needs and any other children that my wife and I have. I'm giving my wife the time that she needs. I'm behaving on a daily basis in accordance with my character. Like, I don't lose my patience and fly off the handle. I don't get annoyed at stupid stuff. Like, that to me, like, I think that first of all, that is success because that's what life is supposed to be. And secondly, I think that it's success because when you do those things, I think all the things people usually attribute with success happen, but you're not worried about it anymore.
Yep. I love that. And then the last question, which kind of ties into that, and I feel like you already touched on, and this one I didn't prepare you about in advance, which is fun. Which one, the journey or the destination?
I think it's both. I think that without some element of destination, the journey does become a little bit meaningless. But I mean, as a Catholic, my life isn't about here, right? It's about heaven. It's about where I'm going. And so there is some element where falling in love with the journey, I think, is the only way to live. But that doesn't mean you don't enjoy the destinations when you get the chance to have them, right? But I mean, to me, the destination is never really a destination, right? Because even if your destination was like that trip to Hawaii, well, that's a 7-day period in your life. Or even if it was a month, it's a 30-day period in your life. You're still right back to the journey when it's over. So I mean, even if you allow yourself to enjoy the destinations, not even allow yourself, I mean, you should, right? You should always be present in the moment you're in. But I think that falling in love with the journey is probably the surest way to make sure you've not missed anything when you are on your deathbed looking back.
And I think that fits into what you were talking about, success, thinking to your future self 20 years down the road, looking back and not wanting to regret not being in the present in the moment, which is striving for some destination and then totally flying through the journey because we just want to skip past it all, right? So
that, right, that 100%. Seems
to fit well. Yeah. So, John, where is the best place? I know LinkedIn is the number one place to find you and you're super active. Where else can they find you, content, the things that you're working
on? Yeah. So skymapstudios.com is our website. You can jump on there. We've got a pretty active blog if you want to learn about some just stuff we do. And if you want to educate yourself on some marketing, LinkedIn's great. My email, john@skymapstudios.com. And then we will be launching the podcast version of our show soon. Right now we have vidcasts up on the website, but we're going to be putting that up as a podcast. Humans of LinkedIn is our podcast. We'll be putting that up on iTunes and podcast places, whatever that means. I don't it goes to some distributor and they put it out. But you know, if you want to listen to the podcast, but yeah, those are the best ways to get a hold of us. Also, you can jump on our email list. This might be interesting. We don't do like marketing emails, but I do an email every week called Monday Morning Rocket Fuel. And so I just sent an email on Monday mornings and it has three components. It's business, it's personal, it's family. And basically I just share some stuff that like I think is cool, whether it's a quote I read or a book that I'm reading in those three categories. So it's something about business, which is usually going to be marketing related, something about my personal life, like habits I'm building or things that I'm realizing, and then something about family, like how I'm trying to make my family life better. And it's just a way to hopefully if other people read it and think, hey, that's cool, that's a good idea. To me, it's a brand building thing. I want to create emotional relationships with customers or with clients too. If they want to work with us, that's fine. But I want it to be because they want to work with us because they think we're great people, not just because they're like, oh, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. Like, I don't really care as much about that. Like, we want amazing people to work with us because we want to do amazing work for amazing people. And that's more important to me than like a huge number of clients.
Awesome. Well, I think that's great. I've been doing something similar with my newsletter, but I like the personal spin. So I might take that and start doing that with mine.
Please do.
Yeah. John, thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show. As always, sharing all this info. We could have kept running for a long time. Definitely have to come back and talk again, especially once your album comes out. Then we'll have to talk. Thanks, John, for being on here.
Thank you, Jason. Take care.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.